No, I think he looked at me to start.
Yeah. Okay, let me roll. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. For the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I serve as the Division Chief for State Forests. So today we are reinitiating, and I do want to say at the table with me is Justin Buttress, and he's our operations and policy analyst and the lead for this forest management plan project. So we'll be tag teaming the presentation a little bit today. So we are reinitiating the forest management plan project, and you may remember that we paused this work in March of 2016 when our priorities shifted, and they shifted due to the urgency of our financial situation, as most of you are aware. There was also increasing need for complex analyses, and so we were running up against our available resources to do that kind of work, and we are working under the uncertainty that was presented by operating under multiple notices of intent to sue the division. So we shifted our focus to four primary priority areas, and they included a technical review of our inventory growth and yield data, and I think everyone here is familiar with that. We had worked with the technical expert review group and a contractor, ultimately a contractor, to reconcile the input that we got from that group. That work was completed in the spring of 2017 and presented here to the Board of Forestry. We also worked to align our district implementation plan. So these are 10-year plans that outline how the district will implement the forest management plan. And many of those had been postponed in recognition that we were revising the forest management plan. And so as it became apparent that we were going to need some more time on the plan, we decided to put some resources towards revising those plans to better align them with the forest management plan. Excuse me. And that work was completed early last year. The third priority area was to further explore a programmatic ESA compliance tool such as an habitat conservation plan or safe harbor. And in fact, we acquired a safe harbor agreement for our Western Lane district. And that is related to a project to look at the effect of barred owl removal on owl populations. And so we were able to come to agreement with Fish and Wildlife Service to allow that study to progress. At the same time help provide some assurances about our ability to harvest out there. And of course, we continue to pursue the habitat conservation plan. I talked a little bit about that already this morning. And then the fourth was to work on business improvements. And so that work is continuing, and the intention here is to look at ways to both increase financial outcomes as well as controlling costs and increasing revenue. This is ongoing on multiple fronts, and some of them are very large initiatives with the potential to have profound effects on our division, as well as other sort of practical, smaller bites at the apple to help us work on things like marketing, different ways of marketing our timber and business, how our business processes flow. So it's a little bit of a setting for how we got where we are today. And so the goal for the presentation today is to first outline a few of the highlights from the previous effort, which was referenced as Alternative Forest Management Plan process. So that's the AFMP acronym that you see there. And so part of the plan today is to just hit at a very high level on lessons learned from that process. Then I'll spend a bit of time putting this work in the context of the Board of Forestry work plan. We talked a bit again about that this morning, but ultimately Justin's going to go into greater detail about that work plan, and we can get into the discussion around pace of that work. And so that is what is the forest management plan work plan that we'll cover today. And then finally, we'll talk about the tool that we've proposed to help the board and the division work through the process with engagement with the counties and our stakeholders to help focus, you know, your direction to us, the decisions that you need to make, and the type of analyses that you need us to bring to the table to help with those processes. So that's what we're going to do today. So I will start off again with providing the brief highlights of what we learned from 2012 to 2016 in that Alternative Forest Management Plan project. And the attachment to the staff report details more information. And clearly, I'm not going to tick through all of that. And I want to make the point that that attachment is actually a synthesis, a summary of even more information. And I think you all have what we've kind of called the binder that has just an incredible amount of information. And so we go from that sort of a scope and scale of work, summarize it in your attachment, and then I'm just going to really hit the very high points today. So the intention of then what we're doing today is really to provide sort of a primer on the work that's been completed and help get all the Board of Forestry members at the same starting point. So a little bit of context, planning context. There are several events in recent history that have shaped how both how we plan for and how we manage these public forests. And in turn, that will influence the work that lies ahead of us. So a big driving factor for many of the decisions that we make in managing the landscape is the presence the presence of threatened and endangered species clearly drives our management decisions, particularly for key species for us, which are the northern spotted owl and the marble murrelet. Spotted owl was listed in 1990 and marble murrelet in 1992. And then there's a lot, obviously, that's going on besides these points, so really kind of taking some leaps here. But in 1998, the adoption of the Greatest Permanent Value Rule and the Companion Planning Rule occurred, and it established that we would manage these lands for economic, social, and environmental benefits over time and across the landscape, and that we would do that in a transparent and adaptive planning process. Then in 2001, the current plan was adopted. An integrated approach is the best way to describe this plan, with structure-based management as its foundation. The intent of the plan is to create a shifting mosaic of a range of desired forest structures, with some portions of the landscape being managed for more of a simple structure, while other portions would be managed to achieve both layered and complex structure over time, an older forest structure over time. I talked a little bit this morning when the question came up about the HCP that the plan was intended to be coupled with the Habitat Conservation Plan, which we were not able to acquire, and so we have since therefore had to and are implementing a take avoidance strategy to protect these birds. The result of a take avoidance strategy, there are a few implications, and one is the cost associated just for surveying, where if we have the presence of northern spotted owl and marble murrelet, it also influences our planning processes. It can increase some inefficiencies, the time needed to do the surveys, and the time that goes into planning the operations accordingly, and if a bird is detected, the adjustments that need to be made. And then finally, again, talked about this a bit this morning, that the take avoidance provides some uncertainty in terms of, or maybe better put, that an HCP could do a better job of providing greater assurances about managing management options into the future. So then in 2009, the Great Recession, and we all felt that in different ways, undoubtedly. For state forests, it was a 30% reduction in our workforce. We largely haven't rebuilt since that time, and in fact, for the past two fiscal years, we've been on a self-imposed hiring freeze. And we likely won't, in any significant way, regrow, if you will, our workforce for the foreseeable future. And that is driven largely by our financial situation and a need to accommodate that immediately and be ready for what the future has to hold. Is that recognizing that it's not if a recession is going to occur, it's a matter of when. So really needing to be staged for that both organizationally and financially. In 2011, so the plan adopted we have right now was adopted in 2001. In 2011, it was revised to add a species of concern chapter. There was a provision in the 2001 plan that if we did not acquire an HCP, that then we would develop a species of concern strategy. So in 2001, we developed that chapter and a set of strategies associated for protecting species of concern. We also reduced our structure goals for achieving complex structure across the landscape. And in so doing, we increased the amount of harvest by managing to the low end of that range. So for example, in the 2001 plan, the target for completing, for providing complex structure, so again, that's layered plus older forest. In the 2001 plan, the target was to achieve 40 to 60% of the landscape in complex structure. And in the 2011 revision, that was shifted down to be 30 to 50%. And then in order to provide an increased harvest level, we managed the district's revised their implementation plans so that we could manage to the lower end of that range, meaning to attempt to achieve the 30% complex structure at each district. So pretty big changes, I'd say, in 2011. And then in 2012, the Financial Viability Work Group completed their work. And they had a few findings, and one was that we should look at revising the forest management plan to improve financial viability. So adopted a revised plan in 2011, and 2012 completed some work and decided we should start revising the plan again. The work group also guarded against further reductions in the workforce and identified the need to monetize our unfunded services that we provide. So there was some discussion this morning with Chad around ecosystem services, and we've talked quite a bit about recreation, education, and interpretation that we provide off of state forests. And all of that is funded under our portion of the revenue that's generated from timber harvest. So at that time when the financial viability work was completed, the Board of Forestry subcommittee was formed to address the work that we had done over those 4 years looking at alternative forest management plans. And part of that kickoff in 2012, and then that work continued on through 2016, was for the division, following the Board of Forestry direction, pursued alternative forest management plans to achieve goals that would improve financial viability and conservation outcomes. So I will take a breath there and see if there are any questions that I might be able to ask in terms of the sort of policy context. Keep going. Okay, so a little bit about stakeholder and public outreach during that four-year process. The division hosted several roundtable and community meetings, so in the vicinity of areas that our state forests are being managed in those small rural communities, as well as some meetings in Portland. We conducted a public survey, and we held frequent meetings with stakeholders. We meet regularly with the Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee, and each time focused on the forest management plan work, prepping that group for any material that might be brought to the board in the follow-up meeting. A stakeholder group was formed in October of 2015, and that group consisted of two county commissioners, two citizens at large, two conservation community representatives, and two industrial forest management representatives. And together, that group proposed five alternatives. And one was that we would use what was termed a 70-30 approach, in which 70% of the landscape would be managed for maximize for timber production, and the remaining 30% would be managed for conservation goals. Another proposal was a timber harvest optimization. There was a proposal that we revise the current plan. It became known as FMP 2.0, and the key difference there was that the some of the Willamette Valley districts would no longer have landscape targets for complex structure, looking for ways to generate more revenue in those districts. There was a proposal focused on restoration, recreation, and a revenue stability plan for the division, and that portion for the stability plan largely focused on looking for alternative sources of revenue. And finally, the notion that we should consider selling the property. At the November 5th, 2014 Board of Forestry meeting, we were directed to utilize what we then were referencing as a land allocation. So it's the concept of the 70-30 approach, and we started referencing that as land allocation. So we were directed to utilize that as the primary approach for developing a new forest management plan. At that same meeting, we proposed and were directed to consider a range of wood production strategies and a set of overarching conservation measures, visions, guiding principles, goals, and strategies, including pursuit of a habitat conservation plan, continued measures for conserving habitat for northern spotted owl, the marble murrelets, riparian management strategies, monitoring and research, and the consideration of developing a conservation recreation fund. Can I answer any questions on that? Okay, a little bit around the analyses. I have a couple, four slides on this one. So take it sort of one step at a time here. There were a couple different ways that analyses were conducted. One was that we established an external science panel of a range of experts and asked them to evaluate those five alternatives that the stakeholder group had come up with and to compare those to the current forest management plan. Because again, remember, the goal of this work was to look at improved conservation and financial viability outcomes, which would suggest we need to know how that's compared to the forest management plan. So basically the work of that panel was challenging for them, admittedly, because there weren't a lot of details in those plans. So they took an approach to basically identify trade-offs. And summing up a rather lengthy document, so that's always risky, I would sum up to say that they found that really none of those proposals would meet what we've since been referencing as the twin goals. Basically, they found that one plan increased conservation but would not meet financial viability, and the remaining increased financial viability but decreased conservation. And ultimately, that the notion of revising the current plan, this FMP 2.0 idea, may do the best job of balancing those outcomes. So we continued our work to analyze the land allocation approach with some modeling and, again, synthesizing a significant amount of work by our technical experts here in the division and in the field. The finding there was that, in general, the land allocation approach could achieve financial viability for the first two or three decades, but would drop off again after that. And that some areas that are currently managed to achieve complex structure may actually end up being allocated in the wood emphasis zone. Looking out with that model, projecting, using that model to project out to 150 years, the potential outcome was that in the wood emphasis area, the majority of it would be less than 80 years old, and conversely, in the conservation area, the majority of it would be over 120 years old. And that was sort of one way of thinking about what those two areas would have to offer. It's important to remember that the projection did not include an inflation factor for our costs for managing these forests, or the stand investments that can be made in converting underproductive stands such as Swiss needle cast and comprised alder, alder stands. The projection also didn't account for encumbrances in terms of risks and future constraints in production areas due to new sites that might be found during surveys that would need to be conducted for owls and murrelets in those stands that would be in the wood emphasis zone. In terms of looking at, bringing it down a scale and looking at our stream protection and wildlife habitat strategies, some of the key findings from our work, and actually drawing on some of the ripstream work, is that the current forest management plan riparian strategies meet the DEQ water quality standards and maintain conservation outcomes as demonstrated by other research and monitoring. There was some analysis that was done on a couple of those sites that are in the research, the Ripstream study, to look at wood recruitment. And that paper found that, in fact, the riparian management areas in the current plan are effective at maintaining wood recruitment functions. For wildlife habitat protection, and our analysis suggests that our current green tree retention, snags, and down wood policies and strategies are likely to promote long-term persistence and recruitment of legacy structures over time. And I would add to that that it's important to understand that for state forests, we have what I would characterize as a robust take avoidance strategies and measures, and it includes extensive partnership and consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in which they assess the likelihood of, we work with them to assess the likelihood of a harvest unit to result in take of the species, owls and murrelets. And so I will pause there before I go into linking some of this with your work plan. All righty. So in terms of the Board of Forestry work plan, I'm just, like I said, just going to highlight what we already talked about this morning, and then really Justin's going to carry the water here around getting into the depths of what we want to work, how we want to work through this process. So we talked earlier this morning around how the forest management plan and the habitat conservation plan processes are moving in parallel. I think that's appropriate for a number of reasons. They clearly influence each other, so we should be treating them as such. So for the state forest management plan work, we're here today, obviously, and the plan would be to come back to you again in April, July, and November with various products that Justin will highlight. And for the habitat conservation plan, right now we're looking at March and November, but again, fair amount of uncertainty around what we will know by then, and depending on what we learn between now and then, that would dictate the timing of when we bring materials to you. So I'd say that's a little bit of a stay tuned, but of course committed to making sure we continue that work at the level that we can, depending on the resources that we have. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Justin to talk about the work plan.
Great. Excuse me. Good afternoon. Chair Imeson, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. For the record, my name is Justin Buttress. I'm the policy analyst for the State Forest Division and the project manager for the Forest Management Plan project. Today, I'll be going over the proposed work plan for the Forest Management Plan project, and a copy of that work plan is in your materials as attachment one. The project is divided into five phases. Each phase will provide a strong foundation for the subsequent phase, ensuring key decisions have been made and direction given. This is intended to move us efficiently through the process. This process also ensures we meet the requirements of the planning rule, the Oregon administrative rule that establishes the requirements for the content that must be included in the forest management plan. Today, I won't be going into much detail regarding the planning rule itself, but we'll provide it for your information after the presentation here today. As we move through the presentation today, I'll be focusing on the key deliverables or milestones to be completed in each phase. For each of these deliverables, we will provide a recommendation to the board and allow for direction on revisions and final approval by the board. This proposed process represents a fairly aggressive timeline in which to complete the work. A good analogy for this process is building a house. We need to have the foundation in place before we put the walls up, just as we can't put the roof on until we have the walls. So, as you can see here, phase one, foundation. Under our draft work plan, we expect to have this completed in July. This initial phase sets the foundation for the work to develop the content of the forest management plan. The key deliverables in this phase include an approved FMP project work plan, that is the process I'm presenting now, established guiding principles. So guiding principles are the legal mandates and board policies that guide development of the forest management plan and are required by the planning rule. To provide a couple of examples so you know what I'm talking about here, from the current plan, guiding principle number one reads as such: the plan will recognize that the goal for management of Board of Forestry lands is to secure the greatest permanent value to the citizens of Oregon by providing healthy, productive, and sustainable forest ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. And guiding principle number 7 states, the lands will be will be identified and managed to provide for sustained contribution, biological capability, and economic and social values. The plan will recognize that there will be trade-offs between revenue-producing activities and non-revenue-producing activities. So those are the guiding principles that are really intended to guide the development of the FMP. Just a couple of examples from the current one that we'll need to develop then for this new process. Definitions and policy statements for financial viability and conservation is the next deliverable. This is so the board, division, and stakeholders all understand what these terms are and what the board hopes to achieve in the context of those financial viability and conservation goals. An approved FMP content table tool to ensure we're setting the board up for sound decision-making. Liz is going to provide more detail on that deliverable later. So that is the key, the highlights from phase one. Any questions on that phase before I move on?
You know, one question I have, I don't think it's about that phase in particular, but I know, and I know you know, that some stakeholders have expressed a different approach than this, which would be the alternatives approach. And I'd just like at some point for you to address that and
sure.
You know, could be after we get through this or whatever.
Great.
The relevant spot is.
I think that might fit well when we get into the content table. I think it'd be a good place to do that.
Andrew.
Yeah, I would sum it up to say I think there are opportunities for that. And understand where that would be of interest both to the stakeholders and the board.
Great. So with the foundation set, we can begin building the structure. So we expect to begin phase two in July and complete it by the end of the year. The division will bring the board recommendations on draft goals, strategies, and standards to give the board an idea of what these could look like. And this will allow the board to consider the information and analyses that will be needed to have the discussion around trade-offs associated with those different policy choices. So those are the key deliverables for phase two. Any questions on phase two before we move on to three? Okay, so phase three. As we move into phase three, we'll know the kinds of analyses and evaluations the board will want and can begin the process of making changes to the goals, strategies, and standards as needed to reach the outcome the board desires. So phase three is expected to begin in spring of 2019 and complete later that fall. The division will present results of analyses of the strategies and work with the board to iterate on the content of the FMP. The division will provide evaluation of the financial and conservation outcomes of the proposed strategies in the context of greatest permanent value and the proposed goals based on the types of analyses and information the board indicated it would need in phase two. The board and division will work to revise the goals and strategies as needed to meet the overall objectives of the board and to meet greatest permanent value. So through that iterative process, we'll arrive at a place where the board then is satisfied and will then direct us to assemble the full strategies into an FMP document, a more comprehensive assemblage of that, and move to the next phase. So any questions on phase three? Okay, so phase four, we will have pulled together a house that we can live in and can really evaluate how everything pulls together and make adjustments. Phase four, we expect to begin this phase in winter of 2019 and complete the following spring. The division will present the draft FMP document, filling in the other information required by the planning rule, such as background and history. The board will review the comprehensive document, the entire FMP, and provide feedback for additional revisions if needed. And once we have that final draft forest management plan, we can put the document out for rulemaking, which is phase five. Any questions on phase four? Okay, so the document goes out for rulemaking in phase five, and that's the final phase in the formal rulemaking process that's required under the Administrative Procedures Act, or the APA. We expect to begin this phase following four in the spring of 2020 and complete by the winter of 2020. The FMP goes out for public comment and hearings will be held. The board can then make any changes it sees fit to address the public comment that we receive. After the requirements of the APA are met and any changes are made, the final forest management plan will be adopted as Oregon Administrative Rule, replacing the current forest management plan. So any questions on phase five?
Remind me where the HCP is. Is it going to be right here too before you finalize the rule? So that if you don't have to go back through 3 years of the year process. If you...
So I just want to make sure I understand your question. You're saying by the time we're ready to finalize and the FMP, will we have also finalized where we are with HCP? Is that right? Yeah. That would be the intention. And there are several, of course, you know, uncertainties around if that really works. Yeah. Yeah.
But you're looking to have the finalization of the FMP and the HCP concurrently.
So I guess that would be ideal. And I guess the point I want to make, and we've been framing it this way, so I want to make sure we continue to, which is the first phase of the HCP is determine if it's in the best interest of the state. So if we were to get to the end of that first phase and determine that it's not, then now there's something different going on, you know, meaning we'd be done working on the HCP, we continue on the FMP. If it's yes, it looks like it's in the best interest of the state, we go to strategies. All the while, we're still working on the FMP. And so that's where, you know, as we look out sort of with our crystal ball around timing and what's going to happen, you know, that's probably the place where we'll really be needing to work with you all around how we move, if we then move into phase three or not. Because something, you know, having been through HCP negotiations a few times now, I am quite certain that in that strategy phase, there will be a lot of work to do with the services.
That determination of whether it's in the best interest of the state is made by?
We would bring an analysis to you all around, and you make that, we'd be asking for you to make that decision. It's exactly right.
And timing-wise, you're anticipating that that will occur during what FMP phase?
The intent was that by the time we're at the end of this year, which is completion of phase one and phase two, that we would have been nearing the end of our business case analysis, initial scoping, and data collection for the HCP.
So HCP phase one should be done with FMP phase two?
In the best possible outcome. And because we don't know if we have any additional money to support that HCP work, that's why I'm hedging. Just to be clear, I'm not trying to
evade. And the only other hedge that I'd make sure we're all aware of is it also depends on what kind of fire season we have and therefore what implications that has for your staffing.
That's exactly right. Thank you.
On the HCP side, too, there's the whole National Environmental Policy Act.
Yes.
Federal,
yes. That's so, exactly right.
So we're talking about the complex negotiations specifically with NOAA and NIMS, and then we're also talking about public process that's driven by the feds. Mm-hmm. On the
that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's going to be part of that. So you might be in this complex background conversation at the same time you're doing all the public. There
yeah.
is a public process.
That's right, and yeah, and it.
But we're not
you're
part
right.
of that public process. Part of the NEPA side.
The board.
They're paying for it, organizing it for you. No, we're paying for that.
Yeah, so that's the grant applications. So yeah, so and actually, I would like to make that point.
They already did scoping on this.
Yes, they certainly did, and a couple others. And just to be clear, so then in the best laid plans, Cindy Kolomechek, who was here in November with you all or wherever we were that day, the intent is the plan has been we apply for the grant each year, and that's a $700,000 grant. So if we were to get it in phase one, that contributes to completing same thing in phase two and phase three each. The intention and thinking at the time, because those grants have been available for years, is that that's what would support our HCP work. So here we are, not having heard however many months later, if we got the first grant, I think it's fair to say I have some reservations around the any follow-up grants.
So back on the timing question, if what you're hoping will work on timing is that when we reach phase two of FMP, we'll have reached the end of phase one of the HCP. And when we complete phase four of the FMP, we will have completed phase two of the HCP.
I think that's right. I'd have to flip back. Justin,
that is correct.
That is correct.
So that when we go into our rulemaking stage and the NEPA process starts on the HCP, assuming we've decided to proceed at each of these junctures, that the rulemaking, our rulemaking will be concurrent with the HCP public comment process.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess the way I've been thinking about it is that should the HCP process not play out towards us getting a successful HCP, we've been doing this work and be ready to implement our plan under take avoidance.
Right.
If we, in fact, do get an HCP, it's important to recognize that you still need both.
Yes.
There are things that we need to do and say we are going to do and explain how we're going to that belong in the forest management plan that don't go in an HCP.
Right.
HCP bolsters really what you say you're going to do in the forest management plan to achieve the programmatic compliance.
Timing logistics are easy if we decide we're not proceeding with an HCP. I think part of the concern was if we do decide that it's in the state's best interest to proceed with an HCP, that the work on the strategy development for the HCP happens early enough so that we can be compatible in our FMP planning decision.
Well, I think that is...
And that's why I was looking at the phase.
Yeah.
Got us with the HCP, if we're proceeding, if it's still viable at that point, we have to reach at least the strategy planning part of the HCP before we start our rulemaking here.
Well, and that would be ideal. And again, the qualifier for us is that, we just don't know what our resources are right now. I do want to say we're still committed to a phase three process and depending, and would then have to look at how we do that and how much time each of those phases is going to take if we're having to do it with our current resources. I think that's the take home that I would want to leave with you.
Okay, so if there's no other questions on the process, I'll turn it back to Liz to cover the content table.
Great. So, in regards to the testimony this morning about the recommendation to use an alternatives approach, I think that's a sound idea and that there's a good rationale for that. In particular, if you think about need to understand if a change in the plan is actually going to improve financial viability and conservation outcomes, and there it would make sense that there needs to be a comparison to the current forest management plan. So I think that there's sound logic there. And I think that the tool that we're presenting here does not exclude that type of analysis. So what we're comparing would have to be some decisions that need to be made. I want to make it abundantly clear that we do not have a modeler on staff. So the work that we had presented over the previous effort, we had one modeler on staff and a couple other talented people supporting that work and helping to lead that work. And those resources are basically not there now. So we would also have to figure out that piece. And that comes to priorities and how we get that work done. Doesn't mean it can't get done, but those are some things I just want to put on the table. So I use the term tool, and that's really what this is. The intention is really to help focus our work, your direction, and your decision on what would ultimately be, I would say, kind of the guts of a forest management plan. We've used the planning rule, which Justin referenced earlier today, to structure this table. And so there's a reference here to our rule for greatest permanent value at the near the bottom of that table, and then another reference to our forest management planning rule. And so we're linking into both the GPV rule and the planning rule. And the reason for that is, and I think I've talked with everyone about this already, so I apologize for repeating myself, but at the end of the day, the board needs to conclude that a final forest management plan meets the terms of greatest permanent value. So the intention of this tool is that all along the way, we would be able to sort of do a gut check around, is this approach we're using going to meet greatest permanent value, rather than finishing all the work and then turning around and doing a greatest permanent value analysis. So it's really intended to make that process more efficient. And so looking at the table, the first column titled greatest permanent value, the second column is goals, the next one is strategies. So goals and strategies, as determined under the planning rule, are required to be in the forest management plan. So that's why those are in that table. And then the final column is standards. The planning rule does not speak to standards. It does not say we have to have standards in the forest management plan. We've included this in this table because there have been a lot of conversations around the need for greater specificity, the value of for having greater specificity in the plan. So whether you use the term standards or guidelines or outcomes or whatever we want to use there, I think that's one way of thinking about that final column. And we, of course, part of our conversation today is if this is the type of tool you want to use, and if so, does it have what you want in it? I would say there's a couple ways to utilize the tool, and one would be for us to have direction from you to go forward and fill out all the goals that we'd have to have in the forest management plan and link that to a greatest permanent value statement. Would be one approach. Another one would be to go forward and put together a proposed option and populate the entire table with that proposed option. So those would be kind of two extremes. There's obviously some opportunities somewhere in between there as well. I would guard against separating the work out too much because then we're making decisions in a sort of a fragmented way. And one of the things that I think is a hallmark of the current plan is the integrated nature of it. So it is recognizing all the things that are happening on the landscape and how ultimately they help us achieve our goals. And so I think that's something we would want to be able to carry forward. The reality is that that's a fairly oversimplified way for us to think about GPV goals and strategies. And so sort of, again, as more of a schematic than anything, is that any given GPV statement may have multiple goals associated with it, and then in turn, any individual goal may have multiple strategies. And so how that ends up looking is going to be more than just a simple sort of row by row. So mostly I just wanted to expand on that a little bit to give better context. So it's kind of maybe a too abstract way of thinking about it. So we just thought we'd go through an example from our current forest management plan of what this would look like. So what we're using is part of the plan that speaks to leaving green trees, snags, and downwood in our harvest units. So working from left to right, the greatest permanent value rule reads that would relate to this provision in the plan that the GPV rule reads that we will protect, maintain, and enhance native wildlife habitat. It's an excerpt. There's obviously a lot of other things involved in GPV, but I picked that part out. The related goal in the plan is that we would manage to contribute to the range of habitat types or forest structures used by indigenous species and to enhance biodiversity. I put shorthand there in the table, but that's how the goal reads in the current plan. The strategy in the plan is that we would actively manage to incorporate structural habitat components at a landscape level. And then the standard, and I call it standard here to fit in this table, but actually in the forest management plan, the term used currently is guidelines. So we will need to agree on terminology. But as described in the current plan, we would retain live green trees in harvest units. On average, there would be 5 trees per acre over all the clear-cut harvest units in any given annual operation plan. So because it's an average, some units might have less and some units might have more, or all the units might have 5 trees per acre. There would be a variety of species, both with and without defects. So looking for a range of those characteristics, and then a variety of arrangements within the landscape of species and arrangements within the landscape. So that is a snapshot of how we would work with you to frame up these pieces. There's obviously a lot of other information that needs to be in the plan, but wanted to show how it could kind of be boiled down to the pieces that I think we would particularly need your guidance, direction, and decision making on.
I've got just again on the terminology question. When you all came down to brief me, we went round and round on a number of terms. And one of the concerns that we hit on was that I feel pretty strongly that there's a need to have whatever we call them. I think of them as measurable objectives, but something that you can measure in the plan. It sounds like you're saying the terminology that we're kind of using, that the measurable objective is in the table equivalent to what you have as standard, and in the current plan, what we're calling guidelines?
Two things. Yes, we do need to get our definitions straight, most definitely. And in fact, the next slide gets to that. The table as presented here reflects the table that's in your materials. And so we did discuss internally, given the conversations we've been having, should we put some options here on our for our conversation today, and decided that it was probably best to kind of stick with what we had presented, but through a conversation with you all and upon receiving your direction, we would adapt the table as needed.
But in the example that you gave, what I think of as a measurable objective, you put as a standard, is that right?
Well, I think that comes, it can't, yes, we can consider it that way. That is one way of thinking about it.
Okay.
So for example, would one consider that a standard of leaving 5 trees per acre is a measurable objective?
I didn't see anything anywhere else on your table that was measurable. That's what I was reacting to.
Right. And I think that, again, we can get into that right now. I'd be happy to accommodate and take direction from you all. And another option is I can move a little bit more through some of the terminology, and then we could come back to that.
Yeah,
absolutely, because it is an important one. I'm not minimizing it in any way. I just also recognize some challenges there.
I wasn't trying to provide direction at this point either. I was just trying to understand where what went. So if you're talking terminology, let's go.
Okay. So what we did is we turned to the planning rule for the definitions. We felt like that was the cleanest way to start thinking about creating a common platform to talk about these pieces. So guiding principles in the planning rule are described as rules, goals, and responsibilities that guide the planning process. And Justin read a couple of the examples to you earlier. In the planning rule, it says that goals are statements of what the state forester intends to achieve for each of the forest resources within the planning area. I'll talk about resources in a minute. And then a strategy is described as management techniques the state forester will use to manage the forest resources to achieve the goals. So all of those are clearly described in the planning rule and required to be in the forest management plan. There's more to come here. There's a conversation I think that we need to have here in a few minutes to think about what else, if anything, needs to be in the plan, and how we would define, and what that terminology is, and how we're going to define it. There are, while I have the floor here for a minute, we've taken out those pieces, guiding principles, goals, and strategies, as again a place to hone this conversation. But I want to be clear that there are other elements that are required in the plan. We need a description of the forest resources themselves. We need guidelines for asset management, a process for implementing the plan, and guidelines for adaptive management. So all of that is under the planning rule, establishes that has to be in the plan. There are also, in the planning rule, it describes stewardship principles that speak to the development and implementation, such as active management, maintaining and restoring properly functioning aquatic habitats, and protecting, maintaining, and enhancing native wildlife habitats, recognizing that forests are dynamic. And then finally, in the planning rule, that the plan must meet greatest permanent value. So I think now's probably, So maybe now's the time to have this conversation about what else needs to be in the plan. Get the next slide. Basically, what we've proposed is this content table for which we would initially focus the discussions around the core elements. We would move to a description or a proposed set of guiding principles, goals, and strategies, and could move on to work on another element that you all would like to see us develop throughout this process. So probably now is a good time to pause and have that discussion.
So just a reminder to be clear, those three things are required by the current planning rule, so they do need to be in the plan.
That's right.
And then anything else would be additional. It would be a board through the board discretion of whether it's included in the plan or not included in the plan.
That's right.
Thanks.
Can I get back to the measurable question? Are any of these things, either by rule or by definition, including measurable things by which we can evaluate progress towards achieving the plan once it's adopted?
I would suggest that they are, that if we are able to describe our strategies in a way that speaks to the pieces, that we can do it in a way that they are measurable. And I think there are examples in the current plan that does that. I support the notion of developing concurrently, whether they're in the plan or not, and I would submit that it is better to have more detailed information outside of the plan. But I think, you know, what we would say as a division is the importance of establishing what the desired outcomes are and how we're going to measure that performance. Are those, you know, I would be concerned that we parse stuff out so much that we have too many layers of definitions that maybe overlap with each other. But ultimately, my goal would be that we have a plan that clearly articulates to the public and to Oregonians and stakeholders what it is that we're going to do, what we're trying to achieve, and how we're going to measure if we're getting there. And that if we hone in on how we're going to measure if we're getting there, that should establish a mechanism such that we can come back on the appropriate frequency and check back in and see if the plan is doing what we want it to do. And if those, and I think, you know, we have a set of performance measures right now for the forest management plan, and I think there's a lot of strength in having a fairly small set, and that those performance measures are really, would require data that are available and that can be reported on, and that to have a clear nexus with our desired outcomes.
I like that. So for me personally, I'd like the idea of generating some outcomes, some way to measure performance against those outcomes, keeping them, prioritize them. And I like that, at least I prefer that to an elaborate set of standards that to me is a potential barrier to adaptive management. And creates a lot of rigidity that I think would be counterproductive.
Nils?
Yeah.
I'm having massive terminology problems. So when you say you would prefer that to a set of standards that would cause problems, what do you mean when you say standards? Because I think I'm in agreement, but I don't know if we mean the same thing when we say standards.
I'm mostly referring to standards that I have seen in the Forest Service use. You know, very specific.
Here's how you should do thus and so.
Yeah.
Here's how to reach a certain right
now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. So using that same terminology, though, do you want to see from the federal what I think of as measurable objectives so that you know if you're achieving and there's got to be numbers there to
I totally agree with that. And when Justin and Liz and I met, you know, I think I used different terminology, but I ended up in the same place. And I'm just endorsing the terminology that now Liz proposed to us, so that if there's outcomes and some way to measure that, however you want to phrase that, I think that's important.
Measurable somethings, whatever we call them.
Did you have a?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it. I feel like worrying about the word measurable or standard doesn't matter yet. I mean, what matters right now, we could spin around on this, because we just don't have, what we need is a map of locations of what we're going to do in each place. What are we thinking about? It's not standards or measurable or anything. It's here are the guiding principles. We're trying to maintain, get the dual goals. Let's look on the landscape and see how we can maybe get those dual goals, and then talk about what things are more important than others for standards or not standards, or where is the science really clear on what we might want to do, and where's the thing where it's not as clear, and getting clarity too on the kind of timber output we actually want, because for the last 20 years, there's been huge debates about what the board agreed to in 2001 on the sessions modeling, because they didn't really identify that part specifically in the plan itself. I'm not saying you should identify in the plan itself, but just some clarity on some of those kind of pieces. So to me, it's I worry that we will delay the process by focusing on things that you want to just, let's just get to the meat of it. I don't care what you say, let's get to the meat of it and then figure out what we want to say, what's stronger or weaker, other things, or else you're going to dance around this for another bunch of years. Not anywhere. I say leaving in two meetings.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind trying to do it in two meetings.
I'm not sure what we just talked about is all that complicated.
No, it's not complicated.
So we've got three clear elements that the planning rule requires us to have. And then the question is, do we want any other elements in this content table? And I was endorsing your recommendation that we focus on outcomes and have some way to measure our progress against those outcomes so that we can actually practice adaptive management and make adjustments through whatever mechanism is necessarily, but hopefully through the IPs to make sure we're moving in the right direction.
Right.
The other thing is, you also have the decision whether that outcome needs to be included in the plan, or is it direction from the board about what outcome you achieve? Because if it's in the plan, it's an administrative rule, which would really slow down any sort of adaptive management process if we have the outcome targets incorrect. So, and I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer across the board, but I think, aside to having the outcomes we're trying to achieve, which ones we want to put in the plan, I think affects the flexibility of actually being able to do adaptive management.
Okay. So, and I think this was even suggested the last time we discussed this, the level of detail may be different for different items.
That's exactly right. And
so just get down to business and see what that looks like. Because the same thing happened last time. The same thing happened last time when the board agreed to a certain set of pieces. I was working at Audubon then, and I had a huge amount of other things we wanted to put in the plan. And we agreed to not have it in the plan. We agreed to have it on the side. Most of those things, some of them got accomplished, a lot of them didn't. I don't even think half the people in the room probably even remember that was even an agreement, right? This is between Jim Brown and nobody was here now. So there's some kind of things there, but that's what happens with an agreement and negotiation. So I'd hate to do that now versus we'll just stick everything out there, put it all down and say, okay, does this need to be here? Does it need to be there? this is important, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I absolutely understand where you're coming from, and we're all concerned about timeline. Believe me, I can say that with great certainty. Really, the intent, what I am trying to guard against, is that we get out too far in front of the board. What I don't want to do is get out and do a bunch of work and then come back and get the message that we are off on the wrong track. So then that is why we're trying to be pretty deliberate here, particularly in the early stages, to make sure that we're able to, we understand your direction and we're following it and we're bringing back the work products that you need. And I think that we can do that and with the intention of meeting your point there, Sybil, of the need to, like, not to overly deliberate on things that we can, I'm pretty sure we can come to common agreement pretty quickly on. Yeah.
So I've got some more fundamental questions, I guess. One, you heard a request in terms of a tighter schedule. You know, our board terms, sorry, I'm so nasally today, by the way. Yeah. I guess one yeah, it's coming your way.
No.
And it's a killer. I guess one of the outcomes I would want is, at a minimum, I would like us to build a schedule that gets us to conclusion by this time in 2 years minimum, or maximum, I guess you could say, which is going to take some rework and understand what does that mean? What do you pull off on your other plan work? Do you pull people off of other stuff that was on your plan that wasn't related to this? Because I think we need to get this done while the majority of this board still exists. Two, I'm this may be out of ignorance on my part, but I'm concerned on the HCP side, given one, the history, and two, my perception of how you negotiate an HCP. So maybe I just don't understand that. I don't know how we don't put together it provide, from my standpoint, to negotiate, to put our to put the department in a position to come out at the right spot. I think it puts us in a position that we have to go with a very aggressive plan, because you're going to negotiate off of that, right? So if we're working to develop a plan that we think really fits all of our guiding principles, the both the conservation outcomes and the financial viability outcome, and there are trade-offs, we've already answered that. If we're trying to find that right balance, and the agencies you're going to negotiate against are probably going to have you coming off of that, then I don't want to come in with a plan. We go through 2 years of work, and to get the HCP, we just blew the financial viability component, or we guarantee we don't have an HCP because we can't do the financial viability. So I'm trying to figure out how do we tactically execute to put you in a position to negotiate the right outcome on the HCP. I can't see that path right now. And so it's hard for me to get wrapped up in this stuff without just going, you know what, come in with the absolute aggressive financial viability side and we'll negotiate up off of that. But they've got to look at it as this is where we're going as a board and a department. Does that make any sense? I've not negotiated one of these things, but I'm struggling to understand how we end up with a product at the end of this that works from a financial viability standpoint if we don't come in kind of on the extreme, which seems perverse, but.
So the thing I hear you're talking about is what is a starting point for the negotiation of the HCP?
Yeah.
And then if we go in with a plan that we think is the best plan for greatest permanent value, based on the board's values and beliefs, that somehow that becomes a starting point for the HCP and that the services will ask for more. And so I think that's the question, and I don't know the answer to that in terms of what is the starting point for the HCP negotiation.
Yeah, I think that you've summed it up well. And the decision here around that I would argue that we need to be tackling this is what is the plan that this Board of Forestry finds meets greatest permanent value to improve our financial situation and achieve the intended goals for conservation, whether it's improving outcomes, whatever direction you end up giving us on that. And that we work towards achieving a plan that does that. So that at the end of the day, we've got one that works under take avoidance to the best of our ability to address those two issues within the context of greatest permanent value. When we go to negotiate with the services, if we can't get to a place where that either supports or improves that out the financial and conservation outcomes, then we stick with take avoidance. That's how I look at it. Ultimately, that would be a decision point. And we wouldn't be operating in a vacuum along the way. We would be learning as we go. And if it looked like there was a need to readjust our approach, we, of course, could.
I like your question, Tom. I mean, the traditional negotiation is you're starting with your points and then you're trying to go in. So the reason I'm thinking about the HCP conversation differently is because of the National Environmental Policy Act, not actually because of the Endangered Species Act. So the way I think about it is we're obligated by the greatest permanent value rule in the state, and that has this balance of uses. And then this at least ideologically, the agencies aren't supposed to be like violently negotiating with us on each interest side, because they're going to have to go through that National Environmental Policy Act review, which means they're going to have a preferred alternative that has to be defensible as well. They can't, and one of those range of alternatives is going to be, you know, more timber harvest, and then another range will be less timber harvest and more conservation emphasis, and then they're going to have the preferred alternative that's going to be in the middle. So they're going to be thinking middle as well. To me, who knows, whatever, you know, negotiating with it. And then we also are sort of going in from the agency side a little bit more in the middle is the idea. So we're approaching, and then we're negotiating and playing hardball, but it's a different, to me, it's a different kind of negotiation than stakeholder interest negotiation, because it's agency to agency, public interest to public interest. This is ideological. I know that really isn't really how it happens, but at the same time, it is a little bit different from, okay, as the board, we should either do all conservation or all timber, depending on what the interests are, so that we can negotiate from a harder place. So,
if I can maybe share some direct and indirect experience I've had with both HCP negotiation and development and endangered species consultation effort, it almost doesn't matter where we start in terms of defining where the federal agencies will start. They will start with their understanding of what is necessary to conserve the species that are listed. So that's where they'll start. When you're therefore working with an agency to develop an HCP, know that that's where they're starting, and the negotiation, in large part to be effective, needs to be focused on demonstrating to the agencies how your plan meets the needs for conservation of the species that are listed. And so if we start out way off far on the, you know, the hardball harvest, my guess is that the reaction that we'll get from the agencies is, well, nothing you're proposing or thinking of considers the needs of species conservation at all. So we don't need to talk with you. We're going to say, here's what the species need, because you have not demonstrated how what you're offering that meets your twin goals also meets the conservation needs of the species. So the HCP processes that I've been involved with, and then the ones that I've observed secondhand, because my husband used to work for the Endangered Species Office on consultations, the situations that have the best outcomes are the ones where the consulting partner come with their best foot forward, because then you're really working to try to identify how you can meet each of your goals and needs. And it's just you end up more of a team. And by and large, like I say, in the one HCP that I was involved with, when the group coming to, the agency coming to, brought what they could, what they could do that fit, the tenor of the negotiation was really more of a, okay, so I can see how if you tweak this a little here, it fully meets our need. And if we tweak this stuff a little there, it meets your need, rather than just coming in at total loggerheads. And that, you're trying to find common ground, not start from a position that you're hoping to be moved the least in order to have a successful negotiation.
So it seems to me that what we should do is what we think represents our perspective with respect to GPD, and then be pretty resolute in the negotiation process about that.
But also I think be that real creative in representing to the agency what the in describing what benefits we see by our plan. Because it may not be exactly what they originally had in mind, but if we can demonstrate how it is through different avenues meeting what they see as needs, that's the best way we can come at it.
Whether now's the right time or not, you threw out we have no modeling staff or the related support staff. It seems like a critical need, resource that you're going to have. So is there a plan that, are we going to outsource that now, or what's the
thought those there? Yes, there is a need, and we're going to, what we need to understand is the scope of the information that we need to bring to bear for this conversation. That will help me figure out what that resource is going to look like. And, rather than committing to that right now, what I can tell you is that once I understand what you need, I'll be able to tell you how we're going to do it. But we wouldn't just skip over the modeling portion, for example, if that's what we need to have this conversation.
And I agree with that. I think one thing we don't want to do on the flip side is kind of take a model everything approach.
Right. I agree. I agree.
So stick to what is going to really help us.
Right.
I can't foresee a situation where there's not some kind of modeling that's going to occur.
And so, Tom, you had mentioned you really want a more aggressive schedule. And I worked with State Force and kind of helping lay out this schedule. And part of what is encompassed in the time is the time it takes the board to make a decision and how much you want to go back and forth with staff on go back and change this rock and then come back to us. And so we built in time in nearly every step for presenting, going back and fixing it, and then coming back and making the decision. And so rather than trying to build a more detailed, compressed schedule, the best way for the board to move forward quickly is to make decisions more quickly, to be honest. And, are we bringing you the right stuff? So the thing today is, the guiding principles and setting the foundation, the guiding principles and goals. And if we bring back the guiding principles, you go through them and you're like, okay, we've approved, then we're moving on to the next step, perhaps faster than is in the outline. And then in terms of fleshing out the table, I'm kind of hearing from folks that, bring us a whole table filled out and where the real decision space around where if we change some of the outcomes, it creates a slightly different alternative. If you move to that table much more quickly, then we're ready to perhaps start to do some modeling about you know, what that alternative means, or, and I think if I'm doing correctly, changing the outcomes and what your outcomes are for each of these goals is essentially creating an alternative that is either the same as the current forest management plan or different. And I think that then gets at being able to do some trade-offs and see the alternatives analysis. So I think the with this, the quickness or the rapidity that you could get to these key things in terms of guiding principles, goals, and strategy, and you can ask the staff to bring you recommendations on each one of these, which I also heard at the retreat, bring recommendations that this is good or no, this is an area you might consider changing, or at least which areas are likely to have the biggest effect on either financial viability and or conservation values, depending on how you change them. I mean, you could spend a lot of time on something that won't affect those two outcomes, and that's probably not a useful, you know, if it's not going to have any big effect on the outcome. So I think, I hope that helps you with thinking about how to move through this more quickly, rather than reconstructing a timetable that's shorter. Start moving down this path and see if you can't move it down faster than in the current timetable.
Yeah, I mean, you in essence somewhat restructured the timetable by, you know, what needs to happen to ensure we get there. We need to understand that, because I reckon we contribute to the timeline significantly. And what I'd like to see is this finished by the time we step off. So another whole new, God forbid you have to educate a whole new board on all of this, and away we go again. So, yep. And I've consistently pushed for you bringing more. You're the experts on the forest. You're working with stakeholders. Help us get to that.
I agree with that. I agree with what both Peter and Tom just said. And I got to believe that with all the time you've spent with your staff on the forest and all the stakeholders you've talked to, you've got as good an idea of anybody of a good alternative to present to us. And I'd be all in favor of have the status quo, current plan, and what you think is the best alternative to move us forward and bring us that to chew on.
Wait, did you want to say something first?
No, you're going to go first.
Okay. When I look at the slide that you had, Liz, I believe it was, where you had said analyses, and then it talked about your modeling results. I don't have numbers on this sheet, but it said, you know, divisions, draft plan allocation, modeling results, and, you know, and then you have the in 150 years X results, right? And so this is sort of a stumbling block for us for a variety of reasons we don't have to talk about now. And then you have the analysis continue, which is the next slide, which is current stream protection wildlife habitat. To me, this is the starting point of a conversation, right? And this is why you put it up there. Mm-hmm. It's okay, we did this big stakeholder review. There's a whole bunch of different ideas. 70-30 was put out there. There were a whole bunch of different pieces of that. We modeled it. Two to three decades, not going to drop again. You know, you can't actually get there 100% and honor both things, but we have some of this information, right?
Right.
So to me, if I was going to be here longer than a couple of seconds, what I would love to do is just, okay, here's where we are. Here's our starting point. Here are three stumbling blocks to actually get into the place. And here are the measurables that we might need for this thing, right? And we may end up all looking at each other and going, we can't get there from here with what we have. So maybe we need an HCP, or maybe we can get there from where we are because we need XYZ, but we can start from the work from the stakeholder group and from this analysis, and we say, okay, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. To me, sometimes I feel like we're getting into this hypothetical conversation about guiding principles and stuff, which we need to do, but I would almost just want to say, okay, let's start. Here's where we got stuck last time. And let's just move forward. You know, you're doing that, but let's do that. Let's look at the 70-30 model. Let's look at the maps. Let's look at where we got stuck. figure out how to unstick us, you know.
And I think you can remind us each time of what we want is going to cost in terms of schedule as well. I mean, I think in some, you know, one of the things we've done is we don't have a subcommittee anymore, so we're not kind of funneling things through. These decisions will be made at the board level. That helps us expedite this process. Expedite is a word that applies at all. The other is to you mentioned a concern, and I know where it comes from about getting too far in front of the board. But I think you can help to populate this stuff as we come up with some preferred alternative, and then the sideboards to that sort of thing on some of these issues as we deal with them.
Yeah, I think that we can, and I would suggest that I think that would be really good direction. That's a little bit different than, say, pick up the 70-30 approach and move out with that. I think that that's different. There's, you know, we've learned a lot. Ask the division to put sort of our best foot forward of here's something we would like to evaluate against the current force management plan, learning from everything we did, learning from the stakeholder proposals. That's different than saying we're just going to pick up 70-30, and I'll, you know, terminology-wise, that's what we were calling it. So I'd want some clarity on that.
I like your first option. You guys have the division come together with everything they have learned, what they think is their best recommendation for the start of our discussions.
We do have public comment today.
All right, should we pause and then come back with recommendations? Okay.